In the year 2020, I had filed this online petition. You know, during the lockdowns when we had nothing better to do, 14 days to stop the spread, you know, the whole ruse. This petition was a direct demand that Discovery Channel fire the host of Expedition Unknown, Josh Gates, and give his job to me. Because I am convinced that if they could simply remove him as an obstacle to my own, you know, archaeological abandon, that I could find things like the Ark of the Covenant, and super quick, too. Well, in 4 years' time, I have acquired a total of, 10 signatures. So I'm going to claim the momentum. Reasonable men may differ on this, but I would like today to discuss a few of the theories of the location of the Ark of the Covenant. This and other things on box number 7. When I was a little kid, my parents would let me pick an occasional book from something called the Scholastic Book Club. It was an internal magazine and catalog that was passed out to students in the public school system. And the book that I ordered one time that I still have to this day is one that would change my life forever. And it was a little book written by an author named Clifford B. Hicks, and it was called Alvin's Secret Code. It was a short buried treasure adventure complete with these minor historical takes on cryptography and ciphers. Letter substitution codes were the rage with me at the time anyway. We used to pass notes back and forth in class hoping to elude the teacher's sense of intelligence. Forget invisible ink. I wanted to write James Bond Jeremiads, cloak and dagger cryptographs, and secret squirrel substitutionary codes, and I could tell you, I got good at it. But one of the things that draws people into films like, for instance, National Treasure with Nicolas Cage is the amalgamation of codes and ciphers, national history, lore, and of course, the occluded nature of the sometimes Masonic underpinnings of the entire U.S. Capitol. Once you're treated to the fact that Jefferson practically held a PhD in the cryptographic, you simply can't pull yourself away to parse the fictional from the actual. And although Nicolas Cage's uncanny ability to deliver the absurd line, "That's it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence." Well, it also sets you up for a launch off the tarmac of intrigue later down the line. So, great job, Nicolas Cage. But really, as cool as the national relics are, and as many crypto-occultic revelations come out about, I don't know, Benjamin Franklin and the Hellfire Club, we'll talk about him and that on another show, nothing can beat the immense power, glory, and historically cataclysmic significance of the Ark of the Covenant. Now, religious tradition describes it as a wooden storage chest decorated in solid gold, accompanied by an ornamental lid known as the Seat of Mercy. According to the Book of Exodus and 1 Kings, and also in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, the Ark contained the tablets of the law, which God delivered the Ten Commandments to Moses at Mount Sinai. According to the book of Exodus, the book of Numbers, and the epistle to the Hebrews, also in the New Testament, it also contained Aaron's rod and a pot of manna. Manna, of course, being the provisional food provided by God to the children of Israel during their 40-year sojourn in the wilderness. The biblical account relates that approximately 1 year after the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, that the ark was created according to the pattern that God gave to Moses when the Israelites were encamped at the foot of Mount Sinai. Thereafter, gold-plated acacia chest staves were lifted and carried by the Levites, approximately 2,000 cubits, which is 800 meters or 2,600 feet, in advance of the people while they marched. God spoke with Moses from between the two cherubim on the ark's cover. We can define cherubim later. It's slightly complicated, but nonetheless. So, Indiana Jones, the agnostic everyman from the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, is the disillusioned protagonist in that film attempting to head off the Nazis from procuring the Ark for their own metaphysical means to an end. And a ton of artistic license is taken, even from a director, Steven Spielberg, whose own heritage holds the Ark in the highest of historical, spiritual, and archaeological esteem. In the end, the Ark, still containing the power of God, at least in the film, destroys the enemies in a violent, conflagratory fashion that leaves no doubt about the lines between good and evil. Now, this is a great plot line with many plot holes, most notably that an active Ark would kill anyone not supposed to touch it, and not just some thieving, kleptomaniacal Nazis. And it would have been theatrically consistent to see the Ark also kill the warehouse attendant who most likely touched it, attempting to file it away into a level of inventorial obscurity that the movie implies that the Ark is lost to some sort of bureaucratic processes. But really, look, all that is cool. But what everyone cares about is, where is the actual Ark right now? And will the actual one come back into the center of humanity's gaze anytime soon? Well, just like everything else with me, if you're expecting some Ken Burns-level deep dive into every possible nook and cranny, every plausible locale, every single whisper of the possessive case, guess what? You have come to the wrong place. But I do like talking about it, and let's hope that's good enough. So there is some traditional thoughts about where it might be. The Talmud in Yoma suggests that the Ark was first removed from the temple towards the end of the era of the first temple, and the second temple never housed it. According to one view, it was taken to Babylon when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Jerusalem in 587 BC, exiling King Jeconiah along with the upper classes. Another perspective proposes that Josiah, the king of Judah, hid the ark in anticipation of the temple's destruction. You know, kind of like saving up for a rainy day, where it was hidden and remains uncertain. One account in the Talmud mentions a pre-suspicion of a tampered stone in a chamber designated for wood storage, hinting at the Ark's concealment. We'll come back to that. I think it might be connected to another modern theory. Alternatively, it is suggested that the Ark remained underground in the Holy of Holies. Some in the Chazal, including Radak and Maimonides, they propose that Solomon designed tunnels beneath the temple to safeguard the Ark that Josiah later used. Attempts to excavate this area have yielded little due to political sensitivities. And of course, there is an opinion found in 2 Maccabees, which we'll talk about later, that asserts that Jeremiah hid the ark and other sacred items in a cave, anticipating the Neo-Babylonian invasion. Once again, smart cats doing smart things. But I'm going to break this down into four possibilities, some of which were covered here. One, so theory number one that I find interesting, it's located inside or even beneath the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So, researcher and author of the book, The Ark Report. So it's Harry Moskoff who believes that the Ark lies in a storage space behind a 570-ton stone that comprises a portion of the Western Wall. Apparently, electromagnetic scans appear to confirm what appears to be a space that defies the definition of architectural anomaly and would thus explain the utilitarian need for placing a gargantuan stone in front of it. The problem is, political ramifications now prevent even the slightest groundbreaking for very obvious reasons, and that is potentially the most diplomatic sentence I will ever utter on this podcast. Mr. Moskov has a theory behind the many failed attempts to locate the Ark, and I quote from him. When people like the Crusaders and the Knights Templar and even the Palestine Exploration Fund, which was originally commissioned by Queen Victoria, came over the centuries to look for the Ark, what they were looking for was the golden box with the staves. But what they really should have been looking for is the room. They could have been right up against a wall, and on the other side of the wall is the Ark. That's what he says. It's pretty interesting. Moskov believes the original Holy of Holies had another chamber directly beneath it. I'm not going to try to elaborate on his theory because I actually didn't write it down. Now, theory number two, one that has intrigued me for many, many years. One, that it is still, or at some point, it sat beneath the site of the crucifixion, biblically known as Golgotha, or the place of the stone. Now, this theory comes to us from none other than the most vilified amateur archaeologist on the planet, the late Ron Wyatt, a Seventh-day Adventist, registered nurse, and apparent archaeological pariah who, based upon the violent counter-reactions to his claims, makes me wonder if what he saw is true. Remember, when experts react like white blood cells coming out of nowhere, it automatically makes me suspicious. It's not Occam's razor, it's not a rule of thumb, but it is one of those spidey sense things that, to you know, refer to the superhero canon for a moment. Now, while every other corner of the anthropological and archaeological disciplines mock him as a lunatic, he also gets zero credit for his discovery of a Diluvian maritime vessel known as the Durupinar site in the mountains of Ararat, which may sound familiar, in modern-day Turkey. Wyatt claimed that he was in Israel, when God gave him a sign to search under the purported site of Jesus' crucifixion. In short, Wyatt claims that he was able to see the Ark, but unable to retrieve it from the chamber through the access hole through which he was viewing it. Now, all this is an extraordinary claim, and I realize that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. But I still like the claim, even though I have no evidence. But I'll explain why. Wyatt states that he was able to retrieve dried blood from the mercy seat, blood that presumably ran down through the ground splits directly from the cross, which occurred during the earthquake, coming to rest on the place where the lamb's blood would have normally arrived. Now, I have no idea if this is true, but I'm going to tell you why I at least love the theory. Because it has a plausibility to it, a strange plausibility to it, intriguing plausibility. Let me start by talking about a work of fiction I once read. A strange digression here, but this will help make my point. This is not a book I'd recommend, but to someone, you know, that likes to risk those things, it's not going to kill you. But it was given to me as a gift, so let me just start out. It's not horribly trashy or full of all kinds of language, but it does have a dark premise to it. But the premise under the premise, completely brilliant. It was written by esteemed horror writer Clive Barker. The book is titled Mr. Be Gone, and it's a work of literature in which the book itself is the voice and writing of a demon. One that lost a battle in a cosmic war and thus found himself, as a punishment, cast into the pages of the book. much like the way Jesus loaded up a herd of swine full of demons and sent them running off a cliff to cut their losses. Now, the antagonist in the book keeps appealing to the reader to burn the book so as to release heretofore stated demon from his prison. Now, all that is fascinating and a clever setup, but that's not the part that got me. It was the purported battle that he had lost that made it all make sense. Now, while Clive Barker, if you know much about him, would probably deny the level of spiritual insight that was front-loaded into the premise of the book, it was the most brilliant concept I'd ever read. That a cosmic war, a violent, angelic, Donnybrook fight, pugilistic battle, or feathered fisticuffs, took place over the home of one man in the 15th century, Johann Gutenberg, the inventor of the printing press and ultimately the printer of the Gutenberg Bible. It therefore follows that the fallen angels of the realm wanted to prevent the mass proliferation of the gospel to the masses, and planned to stop it. Other principalities from heaven stopped their plot, and thus, the demon speaking in Clive Barker's book is one of the losing conscripted soldiers from the nether regions. And what's most amazing to me is, I can see where a battle like this could have actually taken place, as we are aware of a similar one, past and yet to come. So the plausibility of the blood of Christ not only achieving the metaphysical miracle of forgiveness for all who seek it, but symbolically finishing the work on the mercy seat. Now, there's no scriptural account for this, and if there was, presuming it happened, then the ark would have been stolen straight away, as we are treated to the impossible rending of the temple veil, which God apparently felt was a needed transitional miracle that spoke directly to the Jewish culture of the day. That, in and of itself, was enough. But the idea of Jesus' blood symbolically finishing the story on top of the centrifugal object, it's a brilliant image in my mind. I mean, come on. Ron Wyatt has been dismissed as a rogue amateur, but one day I'm going to know for sure, and I, for one, hope he nailed it. Theory number three, it's in a cave on Mount Nebo. So here, we simply have to appeal to the apocryphal book of Maccabees. You remember Maccabees, right? The non-canonical book that used to be in your Bible if you were King James only before the mid-1800s. And yet, the clearest account of Hanukkah sits right there in the Maccabees, where Antiochus Epiphanes took over the temple and demanded the Jews worship him while committing an abomination of desolation in the temple by sacrificing pigs and forcing the regional Jews to eat pork. And if they didn't, he cooked their children alive on a skillet. You normally miss that during Hanukkah. But Hanukkah is the story of the unlikely and miraculous comeback of the divine and the divine hand behind it. Or it's super pretty candles to see sometime near December or in December, depends on what you care about. But we are also given an account about the disposition of the Ark of the Covenant in 2 Maccabees chapter 2. And I quote, "One finds the records that the prophet Jeremiah ordered those who were being deported to take some of the fire, as has been mentioned, and that the prophet, after giving them the law, instructed those who were being deported not to forget the commandments of the Lord or be led astray in their thoughts on seeing the gold and silver statues and their adornment. And while other similar words, he exhorted them that the law should not depart from their hearts. It was also in the same document that the prophet, having received an oracle, ordered that the tent and the ark should follow with him, and that he went out to the mountain where Moses had gone up and seen the inheritance of God. Jeremiah came and found a cave dwelling, and he brought there the tent and the ark and the altar of incense then sealed up the entrance. Some of those who followed him came up intending to mark the way, but could not find it. When Jeremiah learned of it, he rebuked them and declared, "The place shall remain unknown until God gathers his people together again and shows his mercy. Then the Lord will disclose these things, and the glory of the Lord and the cloud will appear, as they were shown in the case of Moses and as Solomon asked that the place should be specially consecrated." So, if you ask me, at some point it certainly started here, and I have no reason to doubt the historical account of the Maccabees. But it's possible that it didn't stay there, be it Mount Nebo has been poured over like an urban geocache site, so there's no way centuries of maniacal tunneling cadres wouldn't have found it by now. At least that's my theory. Now we have a current claim of ark possession by none other than a Coptic church in Ethiopia. So theory number four, ta-da-da-da-da, it's in Ethiopia. Now, every Ethiopian church is built according to the same tripartite model. In the center, there is a Holy of Holies where a replica of the Ark of the Covenant is kept. And only priests are allowed into this part, and there is the holy place where the communion is given. And the outer space, modulated poetry is read, where the scribes, acting as Levites, chant praises and worship. As such, the Ark of the Covenant, whose replicas are kept in every Ethiopian church, the real one is said to be in Askim, which is the city, I believe, in the head church of the church's Holy of Holies, known as the Virgin Mary of Zion. There, a priest appointed for life watches over the holy receptacle. He is not permitted to leave the precincts, and he appoints all his own deputy while still in life. No one, not even the head of the Ethiopian church, the Abuna, known as Our Father, is allowed to see the Ark. But that hasn't stopped me from trying to see it, and I have written a letter to the church. Yes, I have. Another letter has now been fired off to Ethiopia. "Dear good people inside the Church of Our Lady Mary of Zion, I am of the understanding that you are in the possession of the Ark of the Covenant. I have spoken with the French authorities, primarily my master Guido Lombard, who states they've already got one." Yeah. "Is there a way I could arrange to come see the Ark? My podcast depends on the veracity of evidence, and I've already suffered a horrible embarrassment at the hands of other lesser archaeological angels, mainly that appalling Josh Gates with Expedition Unknown. Any help would be appreciated. I will keep this communication on the down low. Sincerely," and then I signed it. "I'll let you know if they get back to me. I'm still waiting for my letter from the Vatican concerning the assessment of the need for an exorcism on guitar virtuoso and neoclassical firebrand Yngwie Malmsteen." So I also have a feeling that if it were really there, though, it would have already been stolen by violent armed gangs because, although maybe I'm wrong, Moses was married to an Ethiopian, and maybe the Ark's ultimate disposition was in a prenup. But I have to say this, Ethiopia is not exactly the least violent place in the world, and armed gangs, it just seems to me that if they really thought it was in there, they would have taken it and broken the gold down, and who knows. All right, so let's briefly talk about something else here that's been making the rounds. There is a new ark in the picture. You're not going to believe it. It's a replica ark, and it is just now making news in the country of Israel. Obviously, there's been a lot of turmoil there in the last year, primarily the most marked of recent dates, October 7th. But we really do need to talk about this because I am literally going to read an article written by Alex Treiman, and this is from October 21st, not even 30 days ago, October 21st of 2024, if you're listening to this later. "A replica of the Ark of the Covenant, painstakingly constructed, its creators say, to the Torah specifications of the sacred vessel that was the first temple central fixture, was displayed in Jerusalem on Sunday evening during the intermediate days of the Sukkot holiday. The ark, described in the Torah, which housed the Ten Commandments tablets, among other holy objects, was hidden after the destruction of the first temple per rabbinic tradition. At Jerusalem King David's Hotel, the replica shown in the hotel's sukkah contained a refurbished Torah scroll, which survived the Holocaust from Thessalonica, Greece. Several members of the Knesset and Israeli activists were on hand at the hotel for an event and festive meal, a stop on the replica's journey retracing the steps of the biblical prototype. Earlier in the day, it was fitted with the Greek Torah at Jerusalem City of David. It was later displayed with some difficulty and via a Schweppes pallet jack on a rooftop overlooking the Western Wall Plaza of the Temple Mount. The replica ark stopped in Jericho, the first Israeli city inhabited by Jews after the biblical exodus from Egypt, and in Shiloh, the site that served as the Jewish capital for 369 years after the Jews settled in Israel and the location of the tabernacle before the building of the first temple. All right, then it goes through the process of discovery, what the ratios of gold were, what the theories behind the gold and Egyptian gold and the gold standard and the golden ratios being employed. Apparently, the Egyptian gold ratios and mix and refining was used for the day. What's interesting is that you have people involved, you have chief architects, you have numerologists involved in this, and well, let's just say this, the primary designer, the main progenitor of this, doesn't want to be named. There's probably a lot of reasons for that, but here's the other interesting thing about it. They have put a copy of the Torah inside the Ark and are now moving it to primary battle fronts in their current battles, which I believe there is about seven war fronts that is going on with Israel right now. But that's not even the most interesting thing. The Ark spent presumably 8 months before it made it to Jerusalem. It sat in another pretty well-known geographical site, only it is in the contiguous United States. That would be Mar-a-Lago, the home of President-elect Donald Trump. Completion of the project and the replicas. What is it doing at Mar-a-Lago? That's all I'm going to ask. Why? Something weird's going on in the world. Something weird is going on in the world. So that leads to theory number five. What if that ark is the real one and they're passing it off as a replica? Like a magic trick, like a ruse, like artifice, like subterfuge. Well, I'm going to get to the bottom of it, and I have crafted another letter to President-elect Donald J. Trump. He's not at the White House yet, so I thought I'd write him at Mar-a-Lago. Dear President-elect Trump, I was listening to the Ninjas Are Butterflies podcast and heard them say that you had the Ark of the Covenant Contemporary Edition at your house. Now, I'm on the list to have it at my house, and it now seems I've lost track of it. Is it still there? Sincerely. And I signed it. And my letter also has a postscript that I added that I will put here. For reasons that may be revealed later. Nothing controversial, but I don't need people mad at me. I just want to do what I do. I just want to do what I do. Anyhow. Yeah, so that's where we're at, folks. I do got to say this, though. At the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned this petition. And let's just go ahead and deal with that here. I have a petition on, I think it's change.org. 4 years ago, I posted the following petition. And I'm going to post a link in here. And I'm hoping that, you can maybe head over there and sign it and get me up to 12 signatures. All right. It says, Josh Gates has been traipsing around the globe unencumbered by the 9-to-5 responsibilities I have as a lowly worker in Northern California. If it isn't bad enough that he's speculating about another Bethlehem birthplace in Galilee, he's hanging out with ad hoc sleuths in Boston, ruminating about plexiglass cachet boxes buried by Byron Preece in 1982 while standing near Paul Revere's house. Gates continues to taunt me, to spelunk, cave dive, and talk to locals about the infamous D.B. Cooper getaway jump while I have to watch him from my Northern California home, hoping I can solve a cryptogram from a department store magazine. The lopsided sense of purpose I feel by watching Josh Gates every time his metal detector goes off in a cacophonous fashion is chipping away at my soul. It is literally taking an axe to the root of my vocational ID. I live in abject fear that he's going to find the Ark of the Covenant, the Lindbergh baby, or Jimmy Hoffa jammed into a milk carton while I'm outside with a weed eater trying to please Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Josh Gates must resign and make me his immediate heir apparent. Okay, so I'm going to post the link to this petition in the show description. Go over there, sign it. Maybe we can fire Josh Gates and get this Ark back to the mainstream and get me and my precocious self out there digging around the perimeters of Old Jerusalem. Why was there a replica Ark at Mar-a-Lago? This is box number 7.